Your headlines for this hour: Israel's savage strikes on the Gaza Strip claimed the lives of hundreds of Palestinian children as the death toll rises to 1,500. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation condemns Israel's strikes on the Gaza Strip as a war crime and blatant violation of international law. And pro-Palestine activists hold more rallies across the world in solidarity with the people of Gaza, accusing Israel of committing genocide. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, the death toll from Israel's savage attacks on the Gaza Strip continues to rise nearly a week after the regime launched its onslaught on the besieged Palestinian territory. According to the health ministry in Gaza, more than 1,500 Palestinians, including 500 children and 276 women, have been killed in the Israeli strikes, and more than 6,600 others have been wounded. The regime's latest air raids have claimed dozens of lives in the densely populated Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. Hundreds of thousands of Gazans have also been displaced as a result of the regime's relentless and indiscriminate attacks. The coastal territory remains under Israel's complete siege, with no access to electricity, water, food, and medicines. Israel started its onslaught on Saturday after Gaza-based resistance groups launched a multi-front operation against the regime. Palestinian resistance groups launch more rockets towards the occupied territories as the Israeli death toll rises to 1,300. The Hamas resistance movement says the rockets were fired towards Tel Aviv in response to the killing of civilians in Gaza. According to Israeli media, multiple rockets fell in northern Israel, including Netanya and Hadera. Seven cities of Beersheba, Ashkelon, and Ashdod have also been targeted. The retaliatory operations come as Israel has been massing its troops and tanks near the Gaza fence and getting ready for a ground invasion. Israel has used internationally banned white phosphorus bombs in its strikes on Gaza's Karama neighborhood. Over 2 million Palestinians are trapped in the Gaza Strip, which is known as the world's biggest open-air prison. Author and journalist Robert Fantina says Israel's brutal bombardment of Gaza is another proof that the regime never wanted to give any concession to Palestinians and will never do so.
Riyadh is not going to be in any rush now to normalize relations with Israel following this barbaric genocidal action against the people in Gaza. This is collective punishment. It's a violation of international law, starving people, preventing them from getting water. These are crimes against humanity, and the Israeli regime is performing them on a daily basis, committing them on a daily basis, and the rest of the world is, or most of the world is silent. The Arab nations that you've mentioned need to speak up very forcibly, very strongly, and support the people of Gaza and oppose the Zionist regime. Those countries that have normalized relations need to sever ties, because this is not what their people have ever wanted. And now with this latest murderous genocidal onslaught, this is stronger than ever, an indication that the Zionist entity is not going to give an inch to the Palestinian people. That when other Arab nations normalize these relations, it's usually with the thought or the belief that there will be some concessions made. There are going to be no concessions made. There never were. Israel has never wanted that, has never intended it, and has no intention of doing it. The only thing Israel will understand is force, in the form of sanctions and international condemnation.
Hamas has dismissed Western criticism that it violated human rights in the Saturday operation that caught Israel flat-footed. The resistance group says the sole targets were Israeli military forces. Saleh Al-Aruri, deputy head of the Hamas political bureau, said the Al-Qassam Brigade's attack was an organized operation that targeted the Israeli military's Gaza division. He said hundreds of resistance forces managed to dismantle that division within just 3 hours. He said Hamas didn't target unarmed Israelis, but Palestinian civilians who used the opportunity to enter the Israeli-occupied territories clashed with settlers and killed a number of them. Arouri said Hamas does not see an outcome for the ongoing battle except victory. The Hamas official said the West accuses Palestinians of committing crimes against humanity, but it ignores Israel's appalling record of targeting civilians. Investigative journalist Asa Winstanley from London comments on how the Western media distort truth about the crimes of Israel against the Palestinians.
Well, the context I'm working in is the West. The Western media we're seeing at the moment is particularly untrustworthy on the issue of Palestine, especially. The Western media has been putting out all kinds of atrocity propaganda, essentially, from Israel, and, you know, unverifiable and highly dubious and often anonymous Israeli sources. And we're seeing, and these disinformation stories are a way for the Palestinian resistance to be delegitimized in the West. And so the context of the British media and the Western media in general when it covers the issue of Palestine is always missing the actual reality on the ground and the real history and the immediate history. And even the last year, for example, is always missing. So, for example, it's never mentioned or very rarely mentioned in the Western media that even before the start of Al-Aqsa flood operation on Saturday, around 250 Palestinians had been killed this year, a record number of killings by the Israeli occupation forces in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And so we can see that, you know, the idea that this operation by the resistance forces came out of nowhere is a really misleading one. And even deeper than that, the actual fundamental cause of violence in Palestine is missing the fact that Palestinians were driven out of their homeland by force, by violence, by massacres, even by rapes in some instances by Israeli and Zionist forces.
Israeli forces have killed 5 more Palestinians during violent raids across the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian media, the regime's forces fatally shot a 17-year-old teen in Kalkalia. They first shot him in the back and then prevented his transport to hospital. 2 women were killed by Israeli forces in separate incidents in Ramallah. Israeli settlers also shot and killed a Palestinian man and his son in an ambush south of Nablus. The new fatalities bring the number of Palestinians killed by the Israeli forces in the West Bank since Saturday to 36. Over 650 others have been wounded. Israel's indiscriminate strikes on the fully besieged Gaza Strip are drawing strong international condemnation. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has slammed the regime's deadly onslaught against Gaza as a war crime. The OIC also called Israel's military campaign against the territory brutal aggression and a blatant violation of international law and international humanitarian law. It urged the international community to make Israel immediately stop its attacks and ensure the opening of humanitarian corridors to facilitate the entry of basic supplies, including medicines, into Gaza. The International Committee of the Red Cross has warned that hospitals across the Gaza Strip could turn into morgues without electricity in the wake of the regime's relentless aggression and all-out siege. The United Nations World Food Programme has also raised the alarm about the humanitarian situation in Gaza.
It's a dire situation in the Gaza Strip that we're seeing evolve. With food and water being in limited supply and quickly running out, WFP is on the ground and is responding, and we're providing food to thousands of people that have sought shelter in schools and elsewhere across the territory. But we're going to run out very soon. We don't have access to the Gaza Strip that's been closed down.
Lander added that humanitarian sites, clinics and schools have been hit by Israeli strikes on Gaza. He urged Israel and Egypt to create secure corridors for the WFP to be able to bring supplies into the territory and make sure UN staff could work safely there. Iran's foreign minister says if Israel's war crimes continue against the Palestinian people, it is possible for the resistance axis to open new fronts against the regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark upon his arrival in the Lebanese capital city of Beirut. He added that displacing thousands of Palestinians and cutting their access to water, electricity, food and medicines are organized war crimes committed by the Israeli regime. Amir Abdullahian stressed that the continuation of such crimes may elicit reactions from other parts of the resistance axis. He said the Israeli regime and its backers will be responsible for the consequences of their crimes. Before his trip to Lebanon, Amir Abdullahian had met with Iraq's Prime Minister, Mohammed Shia al-Sudani, in Baghdad. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution describes as a destructive quake the recent anti-Israeli operation by Palestinians. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the operation has devastated some of the fundamental structures of the occupying regime. He called it an irreparable defeat for Israel in terms of intelligence and military.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Israel will receive a heavier slap for the regime's ongoing massacre of the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. The leader emphasized that the Gaza massacre will bring a greater calamity to the Zionists after they suffered, quote, an irreparable failure both in terms of military and intelligence. Ayatollah Khamenei further described as a destructive quake the anti-Israel operation launched by Palestinians. He said those who blame the operation on non-Palestinians are making mistakes. The leader underlined that the damage inflicted on Israel in the surprise operation by Palestinians is the result of the regime's own actions. Ayatollah Khamenei said the brave move by Palestinians was a response to years of Israeli crimes. The leader said Israel is now playing the victim card and that Western media outlets are helping the regime in this regard. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the regime cannot be portrayed as an oppressed entity while it is actually a monster. He warned Israel and its backers that the bloodshed of Palestinians will bring them greater calamity. The leader said the Israeli regime is playing the victim card in order to double down on its oppression and justify its attack on people's houses, attack on civilians, and its massacre and mass killing of Gazans.
Pro-Palestine activists are holding more rallies across the world to express solidarity with the people of Gaza as Israel presses ahead with its deadly strikes on the territory. In the U.S. city of New York, students gathered in front of a public university to voice their support for the Palestinians.
They need to be more responsible. They need to speak up for Palestine. They need to condemn what Israel is doing. It's not okay. And we have so many years of history that is just completely being ignored. And I feel like that by speaking up today, we can really bring a change and maybe on an international level, because Palestine will definitely be free.
I believe that there needs to be, Palestine needs to regain their land back after, you know, what we believe is like Israel occupation. And overall, I think that there needs to be peace. And overall, I think that Palestine should gain their land back.
The protesters called Israel an apartheid entity, accusing the regime of committing genocide in the Gaza Strip. They said Israel is responsible for decades of tragic bloodshed across the occupied territories and beyond. Elsewhere in the Tunisian capital city of Tunis, people took to the streets to express support for the Palestinians in Gaza.
Today's march is organized by the National Committee to support the resistance in Palestine. This is a first march and a message to all the Arab people to go out to the streets to support the Palestinian right and the Palestinian people. And this is also a message to the West that the Palestinian people are not isolated. And even though there were Arab leaders who gave up on the Palestinian issue, the Arab people hold Palestine in their hearts, and they express every time that they are with the rights of the Palestinian and will not give it up.
Earlier on Thursday, protesters hit the streets of Jordan's capital Amman, demanding the government to end its relations with Israel and expel the regime's ambassador. Similar pro-Palestine rallies have also been held in many Muslim and non-Muslim countries since Israel started its deadly raids in Gaza on Saturday. Iran has dismissed the American media claim about an agreement between the United States and Qatar to block the country's recently unfrozen assets in a Doha bank. Iran's permanent mission to the United Nations said in a statement that the Washington Post claims were not true. It stressed that the U.S. officials and government are well aware that they cannot back out of their previous agreements with Iran to unfreeze the funds. The mission noted that the money in the Qatari bank rightfully belongs to the Iranian nation and government to be used to meet the Iranian nation's essential needs. The Washington Post had claimed that the U.S. and Qatar have agreed to block Iran's access to $6 billion of its funds, which are now in a Qatari bank of a Palestinian resistance group's ongoing anti-Israeli operation. The funds had been frozen in South Korea due to U.S. sanctions. They were transferred to Qatar last month after Washington issued sanctions waiver to allow their transfer from Seoul to Doha. Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. in the limelight. According to a new survey, 39% of the Canadian public say they were in a worse place financially than they were a year ago. At the same time, only 20% say they're in a better place financially. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of Yahoo News has covered this story and tells us more. A new survey found Canadians are concerned about the state of their economy, with more than half expecting the country will go into a recession within the next year. That's according to software company Dye & Durham's latest quarterly Canadian Pulse report, a survey that gauges consumer sentiment on the economy, real estate market and technology. The survey of 1,001 Canadians found that 54% expect the country to slip into a recession within the next year, while 32% believe Canada is already in a recession. This comes as high interest rates continue to weigh in on Canadian finances. The Bank of Canada has hiked its benchmark interest rate 10 times since March of 2022, as it tries to wrestle inflation back to its target rate of 2%. While the central bank stayed on the sidelines when it issued its last decision in early September, leaving the interest rate at 5%, a resurgence in the consumer price index, the CPI, has raised the odds of another hike. Martha Vallance, Dye & Durham's chief operating officer, said in a news release, "It's clear that many Canadians have been feeling pinched by this high interest rate environment and have seen their purchasing power throttled over the past year." She added, "This has had a downstream effect on everything from housing and retail to legal services over the past 12 months. According to a new survey, 39% of the Canadian public say they're in a worse place today financially than they were a year ago. At the same time, only 20% say they're in a better place today financially compared to a year ago. Canadians also reported spending more money this year on groceries, 76%, on gas, 65%, on car insurance, 58%, and home insurance, 56%. The higher costs have resulted in more than half or 53% of those surveyed opting to put less money towards personal savings. Another 35% say they're putting less towards retirement and registered retirement savings plans, and 45% have reduced their charitable donations. Inflation in Canada accelerated for the second month in a row in August, jumping 4% as the price of gasoline surged. With gasoline prices continuing to rise throughout September, economists expect the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, will remain elevated. The website of Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to new National Payroll Institute research, more than one-third of working Canadians are financially stressed. That's a 20% jump since last year. The annual survey conducted through Canada's Financial Wellness Laboratory reached a sample of 1,500 working Canadians between 21st of July and 1st of August. The findings put 37% in the financially stressed category amid rising costs and dwindling pandemic-era savings. National Payroll Institute President Peter Xenotakis stated in a news release on recently, "With interest rates, inflation and the cost of living all continuing to rise, for many working Canadians, navigating these factors have negatively impacted their financial wellness." Peter
Xenotakis added, "The frightening reality of this storm is that the contributing factors to financial stress are becoming more challenging than ever for Canadians to overcome. According to researchers, households had been sheltered by historically low borrowing costs and money squirreled away during COVID-19 lockdowns. Now, they say, savings is more challenging than at any point during the past decade, with 63% of those surveyed saying they spent all of their net pay. 30% said they spend more than what they make, tapping credit or savings to get by. Among the financially stressed, researchers found 66% live paycheck to paycheck, with half saying they are overwhelmed by their debt. More than half, or 55%, said they feel more isolated due to the rising cost of living. Peter Xenotakis added, "These results underscore how serious the storm is. For 40% of financially stressed respondents, the research found their circumstances negatively impacted their job performance through lower productivity and lower engagement. A similar study last year by the National Payroll Institute and the Financial Wellness Laboratory of Canada found the financial well-being of Canadians had declined steeply at the time, with paycheck-to-paycheck living up to 26% over 2021. Agence France-Presse, AFP, has also covered this story and tells us more. Canada is gripped by a surge in homelessness that has seen tens of thousands of people priced out of rental and real estate markets and left to live in the streets of the so-called wealthy nation. Researchers warn government data is vastly underestimating the number of homeless people across the country as the social ill spreads from major cities to small towns. According to a new report published in September, in Quebec, one in two homeless people can be found in rural parts of the eastern province, instead of mainly in Montreal, as had been the case in the past. According to the Quebec government report, nearly one in four homeless people found themselves on the street after being evicted from housing. Karine Lussier, director of a local anti-poverty organization, says, "In Granby alone, we need at least 1,000 affordable housing units. Between 2018 and 2022, the number of homeless people in Quebec increased by 44%, their numbers swelling to 10,000 last year." Karine Lussier said, "Indigenous people, who represent 5% of the Canadian population, are particularly overrepresented in the streets of Canada, especially the Inuit." Mayor Julie Bourdon, mayor of Granby, said, "Visible homelessness did not exist 3 years ago in Granby." She admitted that rents are very high now compared to 2 years ago. The city, rather than dismantling the camps and relocating the occupants, decided to opt for maintaining what it calls places of tolerance.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies from all around the world, wherever you are. I hope you're doing well and everything is just so fine with you. Well, you're listening to IRAB English Radio. I'm Asma, and this is Muslim Lady. Thank you very much for joining us in today's episode. And here with us, we have Sister Zainab. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Well, it's all a pleasure to have you again in Muslim Ladies studio. As for women, there are many, many topics to talk about. One of those topics, which is pretty much common among women to talk about, is that how we can protect women from the harms of society. Because, you know, society is filled with... Whenever I talk about this topic, I just remember some animations in which there's this witch and tells the little girl in the castle, you shouldn't go out because the outside world is so dangerous.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And that's what we were told in the Asian societies as we were quite young. So, today we're going to talk about a very critical issue that continues to plague our societies, that is the protection of women against the harms of the society. It is actually a collective responsibility to ensure the safety and well-being and empowerment of a woman in the societies, in the communities. It's our duty to take action, to provide them with support, to provide them with the opportunities they deserve. And in doing so, we can help to create a society that respects the values of each and every individual, regardless of their gender. Now, coming to Islamic teachings, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Surah An-Nisa, verse number 19, O believers, treat women with kindness, even if you dislike them. It is quite possible that you dislike something which Allah might yet make a source of abundant good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to understand. So when Allah is trying to say that maybe she can be a source of abundant good, that's like she's someone, she's a capability to, you know...
be the blessing for the society, for the family,
she's
for everyone.
She's actually the one who is the source, how the society runs, how the society
exactly.
is moving on.
She's the engine, I
yes.
guess.
So, and for the generations, so... one of the fundamental ways to protect her is by nurturing her self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Because this self-esteem is the foundation upon which the confidence is built, you know. And one can be very firm in the expressions and everything just because of the self-esteem. But society sometimes, you know, imposes some unrealistic standards and expectations on women, leading her, she gets into that trouble of a lack of confidence. She loses that self-worth.
Even she gets into some traumas, maybe
exactly.
some mental issues, because it has been imposed on her by some figures that did not seem so realistic.
Right. She has been shown those images of body image rather than embracing her unique qualities that she possesses.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than celebrating her achievements or, her talents.
Her
possesses.
Inner worth, even.
Yeah. We could actually, by giving her that sense of self-esteem, we could develop a strong sense to overcome this the harmful effects of the social pressures. Like, we must give women the opportunities to develop this esteem it could be through education, it could be through counseling, it could be through career opportunities sometimes
exactly.
because, you know, there are still those stereotypes that, as you said in the beginning of the episode, women should remain in one corner of the house.
Yeah.
But it was the, I think, when the revolution came in the Islamic Republic of Iran, it was... that time in a very Islamic country, most of those stereotypes were broken and women came out and became active in the political arenas. They became active in the economic fields.
They started to gain knowledge. And knowledge, I guess, gaining knowledge is the first step to make women protect themselves from the harms of society, of other people, or anything.
Right. So, you know, even in today's society, a woman loses that confidence, and because of those expectations, unrealistic expectations the society has from her, she's made to do the tasks she was never meant to do.
So, yeah, We talked about confidence, and let's keep it in here. Then we'll go for a short break. After that, we'll come with some more factors. Thank you for staying with us. Yes, the story of women in society and how they have to embrace their inner worth, how to gain confidence or knowledge in order to protect themselves from the harms of society is the topic of today's episode. Well, Sister Zainab and I were having quite an interesting episode, I suppose. So, Sister.
Yeah, so the first thing I said to keep a woman safe from the harmful effects of society is to boost her self-esteem. We supported our claim with the verse from Surah Nisa. And second, I was talking about it's essential to give women a meaningful role in the society. See, when we say boosting self-confidence, it's not just taking her out of home and giving her different roles. It is important to give her a meaningful role.
Exactly. As we can see right now in our societies, in our Muslim society, how Muslim ladies are having some great roles in society.
Right. I have personally seen that only in Iran, to be honest, because women are given different tasks, different roles in different societies, and they have to meet the obligations of the offices they go to, I don't know, in their dress codes, in their behaviors, in their handshaking with the opposite genders and all. So it is essential that you give women a role, but it should be a meaningful role. They should not be neglected to the sidelines or confined to those traditional roles that we had been talking about. We must give women a role in all aspects of her life. They have the right to equal opportunities and representation in various fields, mm-hmm. which I said that Islamic Republic of Iran actually practiced after the revolution, because before that, they really did not enjoy those roles, be that in education, in politics, in workforce. So by providing them that equal access to these opportunities, they were empowered to contribute their skills and talents to this society, which could be, you know, anyone could come here and see that. I personally, as a foreigner, came and saw that with my eyes. You know, I saw women running the whole institutions all alone, like without any support from men. That was a different thing I could have seen in any countries that I had been before. So it's essential that we break down the gender stereotypes. It's important. And create an inclusive environment where women can thrive. But at the same time, when I say we have to break these gender stereotypes, does not mean you have to make women
do everything and yes. anything.
Yes, yeah, that a man does. Because,
very important.
Yeah, like you should not assign a woman a role that she is not meant for. She does not...
She's not, against her nature, actually.
Exactly. We have talked about that in the previous episodes, but I would quote Imam Sadiq al-Islam here. Imam Sadiq al-Islam says, "It is not appropriate for a believer to humiliate himself." And it was asked, how does he humiliate himself? Imam replied, "One should not expose himself or herself to a task which he cannot do."
Yeah.
So that's humiliation, basically. You're humiliating yourself if you're doing a task that you're not meant for.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you're dragging down your dignity, actually.
Right. So when I say that one of the ways to keep her away from the harms of society is to give her a meaningful role, because assigning her with a role of man is also a harm on her.
Yeah.
It's not taking her out of home. So that's why I mentioned meaningful role. Give her a meaningful role. So... It's upon us as a society to create a safe and supportive environment for her. Like we should address the gender-based violence, harassment,
exactly.
and discrimination she mm-hmm. faces. This is one of the most important things the society can bring harm to her through the, you know, domestic violence. It's crucial that we hold the perpetrators accountable for their actions.
Well, she actually, the Muslim lady, must be doing her jobs and go for her study at universities or anywhere else in peace of mind without thinking about, okay, how many harms now I would face or there would be any harassments or not. Whatever the key point we're talking about in here is that if she's going to do anything, if she's going to take any role, if she's going to go for education, she has to do it in peace of mind without thinking about, okay, I'm the second citizen or I'm just a lower gender,
right,
or things like that. So right now, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back again.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, Muslim ladies. This is your own program, and Sister Zainab is telling us about how to have an active role in society without being in danger of any harm.
Yes. So, you know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala guides us in Surah Tawbah, verse number 71. It says, the believers, men and women, are protectors of one another.
Yeah.
They enjoin what is just and forbid what is evil.
Yeah. So humanity is the most important core of living.
Right. So it's like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is guiding us. He's telling us that it's your responsibility to create a safe environment for each other.
Exactly.
Like for men, they are the protectors of women, and the woman vice versa. And Allah says that enjoin what is just and forbid from what is evil. Because we would see what happens in the society. Sometimes you're not, you're just an observer, but you're not enjoining what is just. You're
exactly.
just watching as a silent watcher. Watching someone getting oppressed is as if like you're equally involved in that crime.
You must have an active role in there.
Right.
Not
you
just
have
behold
to be a defender.
That.
You don't have to be a silent watcher. So you have to enjoin just and you have to forbid what is evil. So if you see domestic violence or things like that against a woman in a society, you know, or sometimes I saw these things, you know, when you're walking on a road, and I would see some men slapping women.
Yeah.
You as a, you know, walking on the road, you should not think that this is not related to me. This is not my issue.
This is not my business, actually.
This is a personal issue. Personal issue, they brought it out to the road. They brought it out to the society. It's no more personal now.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be interrupting as a Muslim. You got to be telling, you got to be using the same words. I'm a protector. You know, we are the protectors of each other. We have to enjoin what is just and we have to forbid what is evil. This is an evil act. A man
we
cannot,
have to back each other up.
Yes, under no circumstances, violence against women is encouraged in Islam or allowed. The Holy Quran contains tens of verses, you know, extolling good treatment to women. Several verses specifically enjoin kindness to women. Like, you know, we have this verse, O believers, it is not permissible for you to inherit women against their will or mistreat them or to make them return some of the dowry as a ransom for divorce. It's in Surah Nisa again. So verses like these make it clear that the relationship between men and women is to be that of kindness, mutual respect, and also caring. Because the society compromises of men and women. So we have to be taking care of these situations. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Sister Zainab. We were talking about how to protect women from the harms of society. And we went through some points. One of the most important one was that we should practice humanity. As for men, they have this responsibility to practice kindness in society, whether it be toward women or toward other members of society. So kindness is the key point, and then we have to give women some active roles in society and provide them with peace of mind to do their task perfectly. So, and I'm pretty much sure that there are some more factors about how to prevent these dangers and harms of society toward women. But this was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you just enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting. for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The UK may block Assange's attendance at appeal to European Court of Human Rights. UK officials deny the case is about press freedom, and they won't say anything about whether Assange can go to France. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Truthout, should he be deported from the UK, Julian Assange, the Australian publisher of WikiLeaks, faces up to 175 years in a US prison on charges related to his release of information that revealed US war crimes and torture. His legal team has stated that they plan to appeal the extradition case to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, France, arguing that the British litigation process has been rife with malpractice. However, experts say there is little likelihood that Assange, who is currently being detained without British charges at London's Belmarsh prison pending extradition, will be allowed to physically attend any ECHR hearings in Strasbourg, which lies in France's Alsace region. The UK authorities' case against Bale has always been that he is a significant flight risk and a reminder of his 7 years in the Ecuadorian embassy. Tim Dawson of the International Federation of Journalists, a group opposing Assange detention, told Truthout. He added, "I can see that they are going to allow anything similar to arise." One reason the British Home Office could be nervous about letting Assange attend hearings is that this flight could come in the form of an embarrassing asylum bid once Assange reaches French soil, a bid that would have significant credibility behind it, given that the United States government officials have already broken the publisher's attorney-client privilege and actively considered killing their would-be defendant. And given that the British legal process has included documented conflicts of interest. A British Home Office spokesperson declined to comment on whether Assange would be allowed to attend ECHR hearings, emphasizing that any appeal to the ECHR is still theoretical for now. Assange's legal team tried last year to appeal preemptively to the ECHR, but was told at the time that the British appeals process needed to be exhausted first, according to Kevin Gostla, who wrote a book on the case. He says that timeline worries Assange lawyers. A fear among the Assange legal team is that the British High Court of Justice may issue a final decision on the extradition and then the authorities could whisk him away to an airplane. He could be in transit to the US before his attorneys are notified of the outcome of the appeal and can appeal to the ECHR. Among other revelations, WikiLeaks has published video showing the killing of two Reuters journalists by U.S. military personnel, along with documents describing torture of detainees at U.S. military facilities in Iraq. While those revelations may seem somewhat historical at this point, other releases from WikiLeaks remain essential to recent news. This summer has been the 7 hottest days on record during a month that is poised to go down on the hottest in recorded history. According to WikiLeaks releases from 2016, the U.S. privately pressured Germany into dropping its demand for a 25% to 45% midterm carbon dioxide reduction in 2008, a move that almost certainly had an impact on the current climate emergency. While Assange is often described by colleagues as a difficult person to get along with and one increasingly prone to erratic behavior, his case could set a significant and dangerous precedent if his extradition is allowed to go through, free speech advocates from across the political spectrum argue. That's partially because of what's called the New York Times problem. Essentially, the worry that if the door to prosecution of journalists for dealing with secret but civically important information were to be spanned and opened by this case, it could never be shut, with future governments not hesitating to prosecute reporters for outlets like the New York Times if they published embarrassing stories. Similarly, problematic for Assange supporters, including many in the media who have also criticized him, is the assertion of universal jurisdiction by the United States. Gosla told Pointer in April, the effect of the U.S. or any other country claiming universal jurisdiction for prosecutions means that investigative journalism, particularly efforts to uncover crimes and abuses of power committed by military or security agencies, is endangered. Noting that other national governments could see an extradition as a green light to pursue their own draconian clampdowns on free speech in the name of national security. On the topic of national security, U.S. voices critical of Assange have often been outspoken, citing the idea that secret sources and operatives working for Americans in hostile territory have been put in danger by his publishing of the leaks. asked to name a single person killed or injured by WikiLeaks publications. However, State Department spokesperson declined to comment, referring Truthout to a Justice Department spokesperson. The Justice Department spokesperson then declined to comment on the matter. If the U.S.-British allies attempt to prevent an ECHR appeal by shipping Assange immediately to the United States after a British judgment, it would not be the first time an attempt has been made to do an end run around the Strasbourg court, according to reporting by Italian outlet Il Fatto Quotidiano, which found via Freedom of Information Act request that Swedish and British officials had tried to preempt a theoretical ECHR appeal in a Swedish investigation of potential misconduct by Assange that was later closed. The Home Office spokesperson told Truthout that this case is not about freedom of expression or a free press, which the UK unequivocally supports. Goslar says that simply not true, stating that the UK government does not unequivocally support freedom of expression or a free press. At a time when people in the UK are suffering due to record-breaking heat from climate change, the UK government has targeted environmental protesters with Public Order Act 2023. This bill was appropriately condemned by United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk, who condemned the deeply troubling legislation. Goslar cites the Index on Censorship, which assessed UK freedom of information and activism, and found that the country had dropped into the third tier globally in 2023. He wrote, "Many of the groups that pressured the UK government to successfully alter a national security bill to diminish its impacts on journalists are the same groups that say the extradition case against Julian Assange is absolutely about freedom of expression." He added, the UK government cannot have it both ways.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.